Good morning. I call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, February 18th, 2020, and the time is about 9 a.m. We are meeting in the Senate Finance Room at the State Capitol. Please silence your cell phones. This is Co-Chair Natasha Von Imhoff, and I'm joined today by Senator Bishop, Senator Olson, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Wilson, and Senator Hoffman. Senator Stedman is excused today. We are also joined by President Kathy Geisel. We have a quorum to do business. Today, we will be talking about the Medicaid enrollment and spending long-term forecast. So continuing our theme of examining cost drivers, today we will hear from the Department of Health and Social Services on their latest long-term projection for Medicaid enrollment and spending. I believe that it is critical that we do examine these costs, not only in the short term, as in the budget next year, but over the next decade. As a committee, we are considering weighty fiscal topics, including a spending cap, and we must understand how our largest cost pressures are trending. We do have a lot to cover today and a very short time to do so, because I think at 11 o'clock we have a joint session to hear Senator Lisa Murkowski speak. So I ask that members keep their questions focused to the long-term forecast and trends. We could fill up weeks of meetings on the topic of Medicaid alone, and if it is the will of the committee, we can hold further hearings on specific issues such as benefits and eligibility. So at this time, I'd like to invite Health and Social Services Commissioner Adam Crum to the table to introduce the committee to the department's contract economist, Ted Helvoit, with Evergreen Economics. So please state your name for the record and begin your presentation when you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to the committee members. For the record, my name is Adam Crum, Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services. I'm here today to introduce Dr. Ted Helvoit, who is the Vice President of Evergreen Economics, a consulting and research firm headquartered in Portland, Oregon. Dr. Helvoit is a former member of the faculty of the Lundquist College of Business at the University of Oregon, where he taught applied regression analysis and other statistical methods. He has more than 20 years of professional experience conducting economic and statistical analysis for clients in the healthcare, energy, and natural resource sectors. Evergreen Economics has been under contract with the Department of Health and Social Services since 2011, when Dr. Helvoit co-founded Evergreen Economics. Prior to that, the department contracted for his services through Econ Northwest. Dr. Helvoit prepares the Medicaid Enrollment and Spending in Alaska report, also known as the MESA, which is a 20-year forecast that is updated each year. The forecast is developed based on more than 20 years of enrollment and claim-level data from DHSS. Dr. Helvoit was the lead author of the first long-term Alaska Medicaid forecast conducted by the Lewin Group in 2005 and presented to the legislature in 2006. Since then, the department has engaged him to conduct annual updates of the long-term Medicaid forecast and to develop short-term forecasts that assist the department with fiscal year planning and budgeting. He also provides training and support to analysts in the Medicaid budget group and has also conducted numerous other analysis for the departments, including the cost of 8 chronic conditions to the Alaska Medicaid program, potential savings to the Medicaid program from diabetes self-management, forecast of enrollment and spending on Medicaid expansion, trends in Alaska senior population, and enrollment in programs and spending on services for Alaskan seniors. With the Medicaid budget being that it is, has a lot of attention, covers a lot of individuals throughout Alaska, about 35% of our population, it's very easy to fall into the quagmire of just looking at the day-to-day aspects. So I appreciate the committee taking the time to look at the long-term future on this. With somebody who's got a lot of experience with Alaska and our Medicaid program and our healthcare system, with his analysis and the questions we bring to him and the update on the reports on how we can look at this differently, and I appreciate the insights of the committee on this, and thank you very much.
Madam Chair, Ted Helvoit with Evergreen Economics, and for the presentation today, probably a few more slides than I really wanted to include, but I left them in there just for your review later, so a few of these we'll skip through as we go. And as we move through here, there's going to be some natural breaks for questions, but as if you have clarifying questions on any of these, please stop me. So let's go. I think it's important some background. The first forecast, as Commissioner Crum mentioned, was done 2005, 2006, and it was forecast was asked for by the legislature. So they instructed the DHSS to put an RFP that the Lewin Group won, and we were at the time I worked for Econ Northwest, I was a sub to the Lewin Group, and we did this analysis. And so from there, that analysis, we formed what we needed to do and what the legislature wanted to know about this. And since then, we have largely kept that same structure with a few changes that have made it better over the years. So some of the fundamentals here are that it's 20-year forecast every time. It assumes no change in the structure of the Medicaid program. So in, say, 2010, we weren't predicting that there's going to be expansion in Medicaid or anything like that. It provides a benchmark for future initiatives so we can see how things have changed relative to what we thought was going to happen. And then it very much focuses on individual aspects of Medicaid program with respect to growth. So changes in population and demographics, the utilization of services, the intensity of the services, and rates of enrollment for different categories of Alaskans, and then growth in healthcare inflation. I'm going to jump through here. We'll come back if there's specific questions. The forecast takes a while to construct because it's very data intensive and very structurally organized. And so we start with population, and we use the state's own population forecast from labor and workforce development. We have to augment that with some changes so that we get to the what we need with respect to the demographic, the segmentation of the population that we need to do the forecast. From there, we link in enrollment, rates of enrollment growth by gender, by age. We divide this, we separate by Alaskan Native status versus non-Native status, and that's due to changes in, or the differences in FMAP rates. Then we look at utilization of Medicaid services, the intensity of use, and then finally, the overall spending on Medicaid.
So I'm just going to stop you right there real quickly. Sure. So you talked about MESA relies on published data. So do you get data from Health and Social Services Medicaid program?
We do, yeah. And it's funny, the published should not be in there. It should just be, it is published data from some sources, but in addition, it is individual level data and claim level data that we, with the new MMIS system, relatively new MMIS system, we start with claim level data. Before that, it would be slightly more aggregated to the individual. So we are using, we're dealing with data that based on the individual services they're using and the spending on that service. So.
Thank you. So that is not public, and that is been culled to HIPAA compliant in terms of individual characteristics.
That's right. Yes, HIPAA compliant. All individual identifiers removed from the data. So those so non-identifiable data. So exactly, and as well as all the analysis is aggregated to individual demographic groups or subgroups and such. So that there's nothing. To maintain HIPAA compliance in the analysis as well as to present results that are usually at the state level.
Thank you.
All right, so let's talk about some of the historical trends with Medicaid program and within Alaska also. So focusing on Medicaid program, and this is just from 2012 to through 2019, fiscal years 2012 to 2019, enrollment grew by a lot, grew by 51%, and the recipients grew by slightly less, 49%. And the only difference between an enrollee and a recipient is an enrollee who actually utilized services during that fiscal year. At the same time, federal spending grew by 93%, and spending by the state, general fund spending by the state, only grew by 6%. And over the same period of time, we're actually going to apply further to 2010, the rate of change in spending on a per Medicaid enrollee basis grew very slightly, 0.6% per year on a per recipient basis, it grew faster at 1.5%. But when we look at all Alaskans across all forms of insurance, spending grew by 4.7% annually over that period of time. And so on that per enrollee basis and per recipient basis for the Medicaid program, much slower growth. Right, so colors are coming out a little strange here, but the this graph shows the Alaska GDP in nominal terms over from 2010 to 2019. 2019 is, there's only three quarters of GDP data at the time this was put together, and so the last quarter is extrapolated. And then the blue line is the proportion of the Alaskan economy that is healthcare. And you see that at the time that the recession in Alaska started in late 2014, 2015, that started to rise, and that would be the combination of the economy shrunk, but healthcare did not, and so on a proportionally just became a larger percentage, as well as the issues with the ACA and Medicaid expansion. And so today, Alaska is nearing 20% of the economy as healthcare, which is approximately the same as the U.S. as a whole. And that's not a good thing, that's not a bad thing, it's just a change.
A quick question on the slide. Can you comment, using the data that you have, has the increase in Medicaid enrollment, how much was it through Medicaid expansion, and how much was it that our economy had a pretty significant recession and people lost their jobs and lost their income?
The Madam Chair, we can approximate that. That we could approximate the impact of Medicaid enrollment that is economy-based versus expansion or other aspects of ACA. So the woodwork effect and other, that there were drivers for call it traditional Medicaid in addition to expansion. But that those could be approximated. It can't be exact, but approximated.
And do you have that data in this presentation?
Madam Chair, I do not. No.
So you can get back to us with that data, because I think there has been some discussion in terms of was the increase, what are the drivers behind the increase? Mm-hmm. How much was it towards expansion population? How much was it towards the recession? So when you expand going forward, if our recession alleviates and we have an economic rebound, what might we expect in terms of a downward trend of Medicaid enrollees that earn out of qualifying for Medicaid?
Yes. Yep. Yep. I make a note of that, and Madam Chair, we can do that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then this last slide, in this group, this area, this is more than just a recent trends, but. Going back to 1984 through about 2008, 2009, there wasn't much difference in the rate of growth in prices for medical care in Alaska versus the U.S. as a whole. But after that, after 2008, 2009, those two lines diverged quite a bit. And this is not showing differences in the price of medical care in Alaska versus the U.S. We know those are much higher. It's the rate of change in those prices. And so there's, you know, we have also not looked at why did that change so much in Alaska versus the rest of the country. But there's some perhaps reasonable explanations for that. In addition on this graph, I show in the blue line, the solid blue line is regular inflation, so the CPI, the Anchorage CPI, and then the blue dashed line is the U.S. CPI. And so it's not explained by growth in prices across all of Alaska. Those have actually grown slightly slower than the U.S. as a whole. But this is an issue that is not a Medicaid issue, that is largely an Alaska issue. And finally, I should point out that the CPI does not include spending by Medicaid or Medicare. It's private spending. Nevertheless, Medicaid and Medicare operate in the same healthcare environment. So.
We have a couple questions here. Yeah. Senator Bishop, followed by Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a way you could handicap this slide for Alaska's population? Because our Achilles heel, as you well know, has always been economy of scale.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, handicapped in what way? So this is increases in prices. This is not account. This doesn't.
It's a direct correlation, prices to the number of patients.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, this is a change in index that starts at the same point. So this would be. Independent of this is independent of demographic change. It's independent of population growth or declines or the size. So it isn't showing the differences in prices per se. It's showing the differences in the change in prices.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll chat with you offline. Thank you.
Mr. Helvoet, you also mentioned earlier that you had some idea that you could explain why the Alaska prices are so much higher. We can just shelve that just for a second. Let's get to Ms. Senator Wilikowski's question, but I think just to kind of dovetail with Senator Bishop's question, just kind of provide some observational reasons that you may have concluded during your studies. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. What is the percentage of people on Medicaid who are working?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I do not know. Those data may be available with public assistance, but those would not be in the MMIS. So we would not know that. But there's would be the possibility of coming up with estimates through the BRFIS survey by looking at that population that would be Medicaid eligible, questions about employment. But those data are not available in the MMIS.
So Senator Wilikowski, to that point, let's just ask Health and Social Services if they can cross-reference with Department of Labor and whatever data that you need, and maybe we can answer Senator Wilikowski's question at a later date. Thank you. Do you have a follow-up question?
Yeah, and I guess while we're doing that, I'd be curious, because as wages rise, fewer people on Medicaid, so I'd be curious about the impact of a $15 per hour minimum wage, what that would do to Medicaid costs for the state of Alaska, Medicaid recipients. Thank you.
True. Okay. Senator Wilson, did you have a question at all? No. Okay. So just getting back, if healthcare costs have risen fast, how come?
Madam Chair, have not studied it per se, but I was a little bit surprised when I looked at this, because I've looked at this periodically over the years, and my assumption was they were rising at about the same rate as they did in the past. The obvious, I guess, economic explanation to this, knowing or studying the healthcare industry, is that the combination of Anchorage being a smaller market and spatially isolated market, combined with increased consolidation of healthcare providers over the past decade, and so it's an environment where the providers have a lot of power. Insurance companies do not have much power, and so the providers are dictating prices that, with very little ability by insurers to push back on those prices. So they're price setters in the market.
So along that line, are you familiar with the 80th percentile regulation, and do you have any comments on that?
Madam Chair,
if you feel comfortable, if this is, I am putting you on the spot, I will
sure.
admit that.
Yeah, I understand the intent of an 80%. I could also, again, as an economist, I can see the incentives, the incentives set up for providers with respect to billing, and I think it definitely has the the hallmarks of a policy that would have unintended consequences. And those unintended consequences being, well, I'll just name a price and you have to give me 80% of it. So, yeah.
Yes, I think that some states have combated that by having balanced billing legislation. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. Yes. If there's no questions, then please continue.
All right, so finally, let's get to the projection. So again, starting with population, just the foundation of the forecast and foundation of the Medicaid program. Taking the long view from 1950 to today, and then the projection to 2040, population growth has declined precipitously. We know it was negative for the last few years. The most recent population forecast by Department of Labor and Workforce Development is that population will rise, will be positive over the next 20 years, but will be slow growing. And that population is aging. So we expect for that overall, or the Department of Labor and Workforce Development expects overall growth of about 0.5%. But a much higher growth rate for seniors and lower growth rates for children and for adults of traditional working age. Thinking about Medicaid enrollment, so switching from moving from population to enrollment, the ACA, so ACA, obviously the biggest impact of ACA has been Medicaid expansion. But in addition, there's been other impacts of ACA with the no wrong door. So as an individual may come in for one service, they may end up with Medicaid also or be directed towards Medicaid, as well as the insurance requirements of ACA. And so not only did expansion obviously add many people to the rolls, so did other aspects of the ACA. Those impacts, those have largely played out. And so between 2015 and 2020, 9% annual growth. And going forward, somewhere more in the neighborhood of 1 or slightly over 1%. And the just opining on that, the issues of a stronger economy should mean fewer people on Medicaid for sure. But there's also the issues of with the ACA with annual lookbacks. So there are annual reauthorization of Medicaid eligibility, and we see a growing difference between the number of people who are enrolled in Medicaid and the number of people that are actually receiving services, which suggests that there are probably people, and this is not an Alaska issue, this is an American issue, that there are a lot of people that end up that are on Medicaid that may or may not know they're still on Medicaid, but because they have since gotten a better job and had another source of insurance. And so we end up with, when we're looking at just enrollment, as this graph or this table is showing, that it is showing a somewhat incomplete picture as enrollment has grown without as much of the traditional churn that has been in Medicaid as people are eligibility is checked less frequently than it used to be.
So we'll just pause on the slide for a second. You talked about now in the middle bullet, Medicaid now covers more adults than children, and then the median age of enrollee is 23 now and 25 in 20 years. I think just to kind of dovetail on Senator Wilikowski's comment earlier, I think what this is illustrating is the importance of states to create job opportunities through strategic investing in infrastructure and in projects throughout the state to create employment, good paying employment opportunities in construction-related services, and so forth. So to give people the opportunity, adults the opportunity, to earn out of Medicaid and to get insurance through their employer. So this makes perfect sense to look at our investment mixture as we're contemplating our budget, how much more towards Medicaid, how much towards capital budgets. If we have an aging population in Medicaid enrollment, perhaps a more robust capital budget, deferred maintenance, might make sense. So thank you for sharing that data.
Then this graph just showing more a longer view on Medicaid enrollment. So from fiscal year 1997, when it was at about 90,000 Alaskans, to today at about 240,000 or just over 240,000. And then our expectation of continued growth in Medicaid program to just over 300,000 by 2040. And now moving towards spending. So it doesn't look like in the graph because of the power of compounded interest, but spending growth we expect to continue to slow over the next 20 years and growing at about 4.6% per year. And that includes the impacts of growth in the population, slow growth in the population, demographic change as Alaskans are getting older, changes in the utilization and intensity of services, and then the biggest one, increases in prices of medical and other healthcare services.
So we're just going to pause on that slide mm-hmm. for a moment. So to the right of the line, it's the next 20 years, and 20 years will combine a blink of an eye. Mm-hmm. And right now we have about $5 billion in UGF. I'm assuming this is full spending for general funds and federal funds.
It is, yes, total funds. Mm-hmm.
So we have to, A, hope that federal funds become more plentiful into the state, because if general funds even have to make up half of this, we either have to have incredible new revenue or this is going to crowd out a lot of other spending that we have, including education, roads, maintenance, things of that nature. So if this trajectory continues with how you've estimated here, this will make a very interesting budget discussion in 2040.
Madam Chair, I agree. And we'll see a few pages on here. Just like the original forecast from 2006, and especially that original forecast from 2006, the goal is to be wrong on these, to be shooting too high, and you'll see what I mean here in just a moment. And it's that the essentially providing that benchmark to the legislature and to the department of what things look like for the program, given the eligibility requirements as they are, the services that are offered and such. So it's that. Subsequent to that presentation, 2006, spending growth decreased precipitously as the department took actions with personal care and other services that were growing at 20-25% per year rates.
Thank you. I think you just hit the nail on the head in terms of how do we bend this curve down. And there's not just one thing, but probably a whole host of things, mm-hmm. whether it be continuum of care, personal care, job investment, mm-hmm. so enrollment, folks can earn out of enrollment, among other things. And then your first slide, utilization, intensity of utilization. I don't know if you're addressing that here today or if that's something that's going to be. Yes.
Not addressing policy per se, but you kind of lobbed me one with the when you mentioned bending the curve. So let's. Okay. but a couple slides first. So the on a per individual basis, spending on children is much lower than spending on working age adults, and spending on working age adults is much lower than spending on the elderly. And there's no surprise here. We know this. And that's not going to change over time. The only thing that's changing is there's proportionally going to be more seniors than children in the as a growth rate. Looking at this, splitting that forecast between what the state will pay for and what the feds will pay for. With the, now that we're in calendar year 2020 and the expansion FMAP is at 90%, the again, under that assumption that FMAPs do not change and expansion, the expansion program existence up in the future, the growth rates in spending by the state, growth rates in spending by the feds, virtually the same going forward. And in fact, right now we have it ever so slightly faster for the state. And this is different than we've had in the last few years where spending growth by the feds have been significantly faster than GF spending. And so that is that all of those, so many of the benefits of the work the department has done and the additional, the higher FMAPs from the feds for both expansion as well as for with Title 21 kids and such, those are gone for now anyway. And so we're looking at right now a future where that state spending will grow at the same rate as federal spending.
So. Okay, so we have a question from Senator Wilson.
Yeah.
No question from Senator Wilson. Any other questions at all? So I just would like to point out the annual growth rate of 4.6, total spending 4.5. We are contemplating a spending cap here in this committee with a growth rate that is significantly lower. It is, one could conclude that if Medicaid spending, while the rate slows from what it is now to a lower rate of 4.6, that is still significantly higher than our spending cap growth rate, which we have of a blend between CPI and population. We're going to be looking at that. So in 20 years, healthcare costs, and we saw labor yesterday, potentially could crowd out a lot of other spending. And it's something to think about. Senator Wilson, now you want to have a question.
I do. Looking back at the previous chart on the other page, at 4.6, you're basically doubling spending. Is that like a compounding interest that we're doing here for the spend?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, yes, it's certainly compounding interest, yeah. So this is, it's great when it's your bank account, but when it's spending, works against you.
All right, it just seems a little larger in the 20-year time span at a 4.6 growth. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. Yeah, more than double over that period of time. All right, so this very colorful graph shows the impact of each of the different components of the Medicaid forecast. So the blue bar on the bottom that is horizontal would be essentially what spending would be if those that are enrolled today stayed enrolled and did not age at all, and there was no inflation in the future. And so starting with that base, now we add on the impacts of population growth. That's the tannish or gray band, very slim gray band on top of that. And so the expectation of slow population growth will add to Medicaid spending. The green right above there is the impact that growth in enrollment above just the population growth will have an impact, so that the rate of enrollment will increase slightly over time. The dark brown small band, the impact of the utilization of Medicaid services. And so for this forecast, and this is a little different than you might see in forecasts that done by CMS or others, when we refer to utilization, we refer to any one of the 20 different service categories that we look at. And so we take all of the different services provided by the Medicaid program, and they're categorized into 20 consistent services over time. In 1997, and I'm a little off on this, but in 1997, approximately every Medicaid enrollee on average used about 2.5 different services. Today they're using 3.7 different services on average, and that's going to continue to grow. So they're touching more services over time, and so that's what we mean by utilization. The light blue, also thin band, is the intensity of use. And so intensity of use is of those services, are they using more of them? And this is not, this is netting out the impacts of price inflation and looking at the actual, the services provided. And I have no medical training, so I my only example I come up with is, my typical example is that when a person went in the past and maybe had an x-ray, now they're having an MRI. And so they're going in for the same issue from a fall, perhaps, and what used to be included x-ray now might be included in MRI. It's an intensity of the service is greater. And so that will continue to grow over time. And then the largest growth here, that mauve colored band at the top, is medical price inflation. And so the kind of the elephant in the room year after year is the change in the prices of healthcare that is high everywhere in the U.S., but it's especially high in Alaska.
So on that note, do you have any recommendations based on your experience of doing this for the last 15 years or so? Do you have any experience or any recommendations on how we might be able to address that pink line?
Madam Chair, that issue I think is beyond Medicaid. It's beyond it is not a uniquely Alaska issue, growth in healthcare prices. But as you saw in the early graph with the comparing the CPI for healthcare services between the U.S. and for the Anchorage metro area, we see it's growing faster. And so I believe there are options of healthcare reform out there that are beyond that will affect Medicaid, but are not Medicaid in their implementation. And you mentioned the 80%, that may be one. I don't know. I'm not an expert on HMOs, and I don't know that allowing HMO systems in Alaska would provide any benefits. But my understanding is that's right now HMOs are not permitted to operate in Alaska. So there is, I guess from that economist perspective, the power appears to lie, or the power does lie in the healthcare industry across the U.S. and especially especially in a place like Anchorage. It's with the providers, and there needs to be, and I don't know what it is, that negotiated solution that can help bend that relationship or more equalize it.
And I appreciate that. Thank you. And I think what's important for this committee is that we are being presented here data from the past, data from the present, data to the future, based on very rational assumptions. This is the table, and this is the body that deliberates policy, and we utilize data, or I like to utilize data to help shape policy. So I did put you on the spot again, and I appreciate you answering to the best of your ability. But yes, this is the table that I hope that after this presentation, you still allow the concepts you're learning here to kind of mull over your head, and perhaps we can find ways to address this pink growth, something like price transparency or an all-payer claims database. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
All right, so let's talk about the bending the cost curve. And so with this graph and for the next two graphs, we're going to look at comparing the actual spending on Medicaid, historical spending on Medicaid, the projected spending from that original forecast presented in 2006, and then this forecast. And so in each one of those, the solid red line is actual spending, or is historical spending or enrollment and such. The blue dots are the original long-term forecast from 2006, and then the green dashes are this forecast I'm presenting today. And so this gives a very, very dramatic, I think, look at how the department has enacted changes that have changed essentially the course of spending on the Medicaid program. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, that original contract with the Lewin Group, that analysis was based on the legislature saying this is going to be out of control in 20 years. We need to get a handle on this, and so that's why that contract, that RFP was submitted or was issued. And so things have changed quite a bit. And so and it's important to consider that what's actual spending, that red line, has happened even with the impacts of the ACA and Medicaid expansion. And so with this figure is showing the number of persons enrolled in Medicaid. And so the red is historical. The blue dots are the projection of enrollment from that original forecast, and then the green is the projection from this forecast. And so you can see that through up until 2016, when expansion began, the forecasted enrollment and actual enrollment tracked very closely together. Expansion occurred, and enrollment increased precipitously with expansion. So you have lower spending than we expected back in 2006, but a lot more people enrolled. And so the effect is that on a per, in this case, I'm sorry, let's go back one slide. These are recipients as opposed to enrollees, so my apologies. People actually receive, Medicaid enrollees receiving services. So, so the combination of lower spending, overall spending on Medicaid, many more people receiving services through Medicaid, this graph shows on a per recipient basis, spending was very flat for the 10 years after that original forecast, and our and now, or actually 15 years since that original forecast, and though we expect it to grow more into the future. And so there has been a lot of bending of the cost curve, and quite honestly, the Medicaid program serving a lot more people at a much lower cost on a per recipient basis.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you. Kind of a broader question, but I've read, heard that healthcare costs in the United States are much, much higher than anywhere else in the world, and yet the outcomes are similar, if not worse, than other places in the world. So how do other countries keep their healthcare costs so much lower than the U.S. with similar outcomes?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, truly not my area of expertise. It's with respect to outcomes and cost and stuff like that, that I think that would be I could argue both sides of either of that of those arguments and stuff. So I think it's I wouldn't call myself qualified to really opine on those. So. Okay. All right. So shifting gears from the primary forecast to looking at chronic conditions in the Medicaid program. And so this is a new addition to the long-term forecast that that we just began this year. And this kind of comes off of work that we did over the last few years to look at chronic conditions, spending on chronic conditions and the Medicaid. And this will continue in the future. And I really think this is one of the areas of the issue of chronic conditions and the understanding the impact that chronic conditions have on medical spending overall, healthcare spending overall, and maybe in particular spending by on Medicaid and other public systems. This is an area of interest. It's pretty universal. This is beyond Alaska, beyond the U.S. This is a big issue across the world right now. So the good news is most Medicaid recipients do not have a chronic condition. And so this graph shows just for fiscal year 2018, segmenting the recipients by age. So under 15, 10 to 24, 15 to 34 onward. And the blue part of the bar showing those without a chronic condition, and then the orange showing the numbers with a chronic condition. Most Medicaid recipients do not have a chronic condition. However, a lot do, and as people age, the likelihood or the prevalence of chronic conditions increases. And so, looking at that, distribution of ages again, the proportion of Medicaid recipients with one or more diagnosed chronic condition increases over time.
So, I think one of the questions is there policy that could, or I guess look at the underlying chronic conditions, could some of those been avoidable or mitigated earlier with preventative care? What are those chronic, this is rhetorical, what are those chronic conditions? Can some of them at least be addressed with a changing of how we deliver health care earlier? Those are the kind of questions that I think that this committee should ponder and ponder together with Health and Social Services, just to see when you're bending the cost curve earlier, can we do some actions now to prevent more spending in the future? Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. And just looking at your book that you provided, page 36, it has a list of the chronic conditions. And is it possible to get, because I see some of them are like tobacco use or drug use or obesity, is it possible to get a list of the prevalence for each chronic condition?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, certainly. And so the list of both, so for that, for 2018, for each of those chronic conditions, total spending, and the and then, you know, how many, the prevalence of that, of the chronic condition, as well as issues, it's not only the chronic condition, it's just co-chronic conditions, of how many people had a co-chronic condition in there also. So certainly, yeah.
Senator Wilikowski, thank you for finding that table. So this is something that, yes, I think we, maybe in the Health and Social Services Subcommittee, which I chair, that's something that we can look at. Mm-hmm. Any other questions at all for this slide? Please continue.
So, and I'm going to note in here that throughout here, I think I'm pretty good at noting on these figures the diagnosed chronic condition. And so this is based again on claim level data, and so the diagnosis there. And so for many claims, pharmacy claims would not have a diagnosis code of what's known as an ICD-10. There's not a diagnosis code there, and other claims may not have a diagnosis code for any number of reasons. And so estimate of the number, or this count of the number of people with chronic conditions, both for fiscal year 2018 and for the forecast that you'll see in a few slides. This is really probably a best case scenario, because we only tell if someone has a chronic condition if there's a diagnosis code in the MMIS.
I'll just go to your next slide. Yes, thank you.
Yeah. So they. All right, so this table and the next table violates every rule about how many numbers you put on a graph, but it's actually a lot simpler than it may look. So column A is 14 different age groups, 12 different age groups that we use for the Medicaid forecast, for long-term forecast. Column B shows the average spending for recipients in that age group. And as you can, if you focus just on column A and column B, you'll see what we always know, that average spending per recipient increases with age. But if you go to column C and column D, column C shows the average spending per recipient who do not have a diagnosed chronic condition. And column D shows the average spending per recipient for those that do have a diagnosed chronic condition. And so to me, what jumps out very quickly is that except that the very young and the very old, average spending does not change much with age for those that do not have a chronic condition, and it does not change very much for those that do have a chronic condition. Those without one or more diagnosed chronic condition, their spending is low. For those with one or more diagnosed chronic condition, their spending is high. The difference is, of course, that the prevalence of chronic conditions increases with age. And so proportionally more people in their 50s have chronic conditions than people in their 20s and such. So that is the impact that age has on spending is the increase in the prevalence of chronic conditions. So and finally, column E in the table is simply taking those two averages, column D minus column C, and referred to here as the incremental cost of chronic conditions. And so it's just how much more is the cost of the typical person of whatever age if they have a chronic condition. And so just taking across all recipients, the on average, a recipient in 2018, fiscal year 2018, spending per recipient was about $11,000. It was less than $4,000 per recipient for those without a diagnosed chronic condition. It was nearly $26,000 for those with a chronic condition. And so that differential, the $26,635, that's the incremental cost. We're referring to as the incremental cost of a chronic condition.
So thank you. I am marrying up slide 24 with the bar graphs of the blue and the orange, and then this slide. Column C, if I read it correctly, is basically the blue data, and column D is the orange data. So I can infer the Prater's law that 20% of the population is costing 80% of the total cost.
Pretty much, yes, Madam Chair, yes.
Senator Bishop.
It's just a comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, I'm looking at this slide, and I'm not as granular as you're going with that slide, but I'm going to go a different way on the same topic. I mean, and I'm saying this out loud so the commissioner and his staff's listening, but I see a possibility of a ripe pilot project here by encouraging people to live a healthy lifestyle and give a savings back in a program to bend the curve on this D line. I mean, I was in Iceland, and they promote a healthy lifestyle. They got four of the strongest men in the world, three of the strongest women in the world. They are physically fit, and they eat, breathe, and sleep physical fitness and health. So, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so continuing to the information from that last slide. So column A is the same in this one. I use the same column headings as before. So column A is the same as from the former slide and column E. So so the age cohorts and then the incremental cost of chronic conditions for each of those age cohorts. And then what's added now is column F, which is the number of recipients diagnosed with one or more chronic conditions for each age cohort. And then finally, column G is simply multiplying column E and column F. So the incremental cost of a chronic condition times the number of persons diagnosed with that chronic condition. And then sum it all up. And so in 2018, out of a total spending of about $2.2 billion, about $1.3 billion of it. And again, this is a pretty rough just calculation through all this, but about $1.3 billion of it has to do with the incremental cost of spending on chronic conditions. And so it's most of the Medicaid program. And this is beyond the average we would expect per recipient by age category. All right, then finally, projecting the spending, so it's the same projection of spending as we've seen before, from 2020 to 2040. Now it's simply divided between those that have one or more chronic conditions and those without any chronic conditions. And today, there's about 73% of Medicaid recipients have a diagnosed chronic condition, and that will increase to 78% by 2040. And that's most likely 73% of Medicaid spending is for those with a chronic condition. That'll increase to about 78% by 2040. And this is probably a low number. This change from 73% of spending to 78% of spending is only based on the impact that aging will have on the Medicaid population and on the prevalence of being diagnosed with a chronic condition. This does not include any trends in beyond that the aging cohort or the aging component of chronic conditions. And so it's a big part of spending on Medicaid today. It's going to be and a big part of spending on Medicaid or on healthcare spending everywhere. And it's only going to grow into the future.
So 73% of Medicaid spending is on beneficiary diagnosed with one or more chronic conditions today. What's the percentage, going back to slide 24, of how many people, did you say that data already, how many people out of the total population have a chronic condition? Is it 20% of the population?
Of the Medicaid population?
Yes.
Yes. So 61,000 out of, I believe there was 210,000. These are recipients. So 61,000 recipients out of 210,000. So around 30%, roughly 30%. And again, the manager diagnosed chronic conditions. So we would be missing anyone who is receiving services but has not been diagnosed with a chronic condition, as well as enrollees who may have a chronic condition but also either did not go in for that did not get receive any Medicaid services, perhaps either because they just didn't go in or because they had some other type of insurance.
Thank you.
All right, and that's all I had for you today.
That was very thorough, very informative, and I just really appreciate you coming here and presenting this report. So I hope that this committee mulls over what was presented today, and perhaps we can, as we go through the budget process, again work with Health and Social Services to look at ways to bend the cost curve. Are there any questions at all? No. Okay. So thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have any parting wisdom?
Madam Chair, no parting wisdom. Thank you for your time and the questions asked. I'll work with Commissioner Crum and the staff to get those answered.
And how long are you here in Juneau?
Leave Saturday morning.
Saturday morning, okay. So that does conclude today's meeting. Tomorrow we have SB 52. It's the Title IV alcohol bill, speaking of chronic conditions. We plan to review fiscal notes, take public testimony. I think that will take up most of the meeting. We are considering amendments. So please get with my office sooner rather than later so we can get those written up. And as of that, just a reminder, we have an 11 o'clock joint floor session, and we are adjourned.